Last weekend's March for Science was an international success. Millions marched to promote scientific study, findings, and education. It was all tied to Earth Day. Tomorrow, a march is scheduled for Washington, D.C. It has a very specific focus on climate change, a global issue. It's organized by the grassroots organization 350.org. 350.org has global footprint and a new chapter in St. Louis. That's 350STL. It has organized a local corresponding march for downtown St. Louis tomorrow. And here to discuss the march and the mission are Ann Barton Wienkant, the founder of 350STL. Mary Miller is lead organizer for the St. Louis Climate March. And Chloe Jackson is the Just Transition Climate Justice Organizer for MORE. That's Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. Thank you all so much for being with us. Great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Mary, let me start with you, if I may. I was a little surprised that your march wasn't connected with last weekend's march.
Yeah, so that was actually a decision that was made at the national level to keep the marches separate. And I don't know the details of the logistics, but I know it's somewhat around the March for Science wanting to be a little bit of a less political march and to focus on scientific funding. And our march is more specifically focused on climate change. There are obviously some overlaps. We also want our politicians to pay attention to science and value what scientists are saying and have been saying about climate change. But I see them as connected, but and having a lot of synergy, but both having their own purpose, obviously.
So it wouldn't get lost in last week's event. I guess that's part of it, right?
Yeah, we wanted to pull out the issue of climate change and really highlight it.
Yeah. And let me turn to you. Tell us about 350STL. It's relatively new. I think you started last November, was it?
That's correct.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Sure. So I'm new myself to St. Louis relatively. I moved here in late May of 2015, and I was lucky enough to be given the book This Changes Everything by Naomi Klein, which is actually how I learned about 350.org, which is the global organization that has chapters in 188 countries. And I had been wanting to join a group, but I found that there was none in St. Louis. And at the time, I was a little overwhelmed with my recent move to St. Louis. The presidential election actually was a big factor in my decision to commit. And so I actually just posted on nextdoor.com, I think it's .com, not .org, to local neighbors and said, would anyone be interested in starting a 350.org chapter in St. Louis? And the response was overwhelming. So our first meeting in November had 9 people at the meeting, and we now have over 140 members in just about 6 months.
Well, that's pretty good number for you to get started with. And Chloe, let me ask you about MORE, your organization. What's its role and what's happening tomorrow?
Yeah, so MORE has been partnering with 350 and other organizations to plan this march and get community input. And MORE mainly works on racial, social, economic, and climate justice issues. So I'm the climate justice organizer, and I work with my coworkers who work on economic and housing justice. And we just believe that all of those things are interconnected. And I was really happy to find organizers at 350 who also believe in that. And that's why we're centering environmental justice at this march.
Define climate justice for me.
Yeah, climate justice has a lot of definitions that you can find out there, but I see it as a moral understanding that the most vulnerable populations in the world, low-income folks, people of color, indigenous people, locally, nationally, and around the globe are the most impacted by climate change. Whether that's in St. Louis, African-American children suffering the most from asthma, or globally in countries like India, where they're the first to see severe floods and droughts and food insecurity.
350.org is an international organization. Can you point to any effective results of this organization at this point?
Oh, I think that the results are mostly happening on a local level. 350.org is what I would describe more a movement than as a global organization. And there are many, many local organizations who are working on local issues. So I'm not familiar with all of those, as there are dozens in this country alone. I can speak to some projects that 350STL has taken on in St. Louis, but I couldn't be a spokesperson for all of the local chapters.
What are some of those projects?
So I would start by saying that we're 100% volunteer-run, by folks, most of whom have full-time jobs, and yet we've built out a large capacity to do a number of projects. During the recent mayoral race, we had at least one member at each of the mayoral close-up conversations hosted by the Royale to ask questions about their views on climate change. We had two booths on Earth Day, one at Forest Park and one at the Cherokee Street Earth Day Festival. We now are coordinating this march, and we also have some climate candidate trainings coming up, which are, again, they're trainings that are led by folks in D.C. that we are creating local venues for, so people who are interested in running for office and have an interest in climate change and climate justice have an avenue to receive that training.
Mary, have you run into any deniers yet?
No deniers in St. Louis, no, fortunately, I guess.
But they're out there.
Yeah.
And they may also reside in some of the halls of government in Washington. Mm-hmm. But you haven't run across any of that here?
Not in planning the climate march. I would imagine that once we start kind of getting more involved in the Missouri legislature, we might deal with that, because I know that a lot of our elected representatives are not publicly accepting of the science behind climate change.
Well, what are your plans for the legislature? They only have another 2 weeks to go before they go home for the summer.
Yeah. So we're not this year going to be doing any extensive lobbying, but there are a couple bills that we wanted to highlight in our local platform. One of them is SB 22, and that's around the Westlake landfill issue. It's been heard in the last couple of days, so I believe it still hasn't passed, but I could be wrong. It could have passed yesterday. But that's about guaranteeing a buyout of Spanish Village residents' homes. Residents right around the Westlake landfill, they have found radioactive content in some of the homes around there, and really the EPA has abandoned the citizens residing near this landfill, and so we think that at the very least that the government should take care of these citizens, because they've been exposed to serious harm as a result of this landfill that's just been really mismanaged. There's also a bill, SB 246, that's proposing that a fee be charged to people who generate their own solar energy. And so we are coming out in opposition to that.
All right. Chloe, do you have the sense that people marching can make a difference?
I know that marching alone won't change everything, but I believe that marches have the potential to bring a lot of people together and get a lot of people talking with each other. I know that a lot of the organizations that we've been working with building up to this march, we may not have been in contact with if it weren't for the planning for tomorrow. So I think that marches have the potential to inspire people also, because I know that I get a little hopeless sometimes with the state of the planet in society, and I think marches are something that are really exciting and can build momentum and build movements, especially when music and dances and really great speakers are incorporated, like we hope to do tomorrow.
And how about you? Do you think that you've had a nice increase in your numbers since last November? Do you think people marching can make a difference?
I would agree with Chloe. I think marching is a part of the solution, and it's not the whole solution. There are many, many pieces to it, and no one organization or no one act can solve all of that. But we hope that marching can be part of the solution in bringing those people together, highlighting the intersections between climate and other social issues that require that we address them, and hopefully make progress on those things.
Let me ask you about where this effort is really directed. I mentioned a moment ago that the folks in Washington under the new administration really don't seem too friendly to the environment. Is that your target tomorrow?
I would say that our target tomorrow is at multiple levels. Our target is certainly at a national level. We want to highlight that Americans, and by Americans, I mean citizens, I mean immigrants, I mean people who are living here temporarily, are all concerned about climate change. So that is part of it. And another part of it is to show our local politicians at local levels as well as at the state level that this is something important to Missourians and St. Louisans.
Yeah. How about you, Mary? A lot of people say you're aiming this all at Donald Trump. and Rick Perry and people like that.
I would echo what Chloe and Anne said. I really see, especially with the administration we have right now, the biggest impact we're going to be able to have in the next few years is on the local level. I really want our local politicians to see that St. Louisans want St. Louis to become a leader in climate change, in combating climate change and in environmental justice. And again, like Chloe said, this is part of a movement building. So outside of showing our passion in the streets tomorrow to local politicians, we want to show each other that there are a number of passionate people in this city who want to make a difference.
What sort of a number would you be looking for tomorrow to call the day a success?
I wouldn't say that we're really looking for like a certain number, especially with the rain. We really don't know what's going to happen. We have around 1,000 RSVPs right now and 2,000 people on top of that who have shown public interest. So I would love for, you know, all those people to show up and more.
Right. Chloe had indicated you have lots going on tomorrow, more than just marching. What, for instance?
Well, tomorrow we have a rally. We are starting with a rally. We have a number of speakers at the rally. Tashara Jones is going to be kind of our first speaker, but we have 7 others. We also have music. The People's Joy Parade is bringing some big art pieces that they're going to use in the parade on May 5th. We're also going to have a middle school drum line. So it should be a good time outside of being a good opportunity to show your voice.
And where is all of this taking place?
It's at Sarah Sculpture Park, which is at 11th Street between Chestnut and Market.
Okay, and that's starting at noon?
Starting at noon, okay. Yes, sir. Yep.
And let me come back to you and to Chloe with regard to what do you think are the biggest, have you identified as the biggest threats to the climate right now?
As in causing factors?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my belief is that it's an economy worldwide that's based on fossil fuels. It's also an economy that's built on the principle of valuing profits over people. Which we've seen in a number of movements, not just the climate justice movement at this point in time. 350.org kind of sees the solution to all of those things in 3 different prongs, to keep carbon in the ground in all its form, including coal, oil, and natural gas, and building a low-carbon economy that is equitable for all people, as well as holding our governments accountable at all levels.
Mm. But you listen to what's going on in Washington. They're talking about restoring coal to a former prominence, putting coal miners back to work. I mean, this is something that is totally contrary to what you folks are all about.
That's absolutely right, and it's very troubling, and that's one of the reasons that our march and bringing all the people who are currently working on it as well as people who have not yet begun working on it together to join forces. Mm.
This debate has been going on. This discussion has been going on for a long time. And yet here we are. We're pretty much where we were last year, the year before that, and maybe 10 years before that.
The first time I read about climate change, it was being called global warming at that time, and I was a sophomore in high school. It was in my geography class textbook, and I remember reading about it, and in the textbook it was saying, you know, it was called into question that this may be caused by natural forces. And at the time I thought that sounded silly and naive, and I can't believe that half my lifetime later, more than that, it's still a debate rather than something that's accepted as fact and moving forward on making progress.
Chloe, isn't that frustrating for you?
It's really frustrating. I'm just out of college and I studied environmental studies, and I honestly just got really sad that, I mean, people have known about this before I was even born, and nothing has been done about it on a wide enough scale to affect major change. But I would agree with Anne that we just have to put people over profits now. for so long, indigenous communities, people of color, people living in poverty, have been made sacrifice zones. Their communities have and exploited for profits. And we can't make that normal anymore. We have to stand up and say that that's wrong and that these communities need justice.
What about the idea of joining with other organizations who have the same objectives? I mean, it's great to have a number of organizations, but unless there's some sort of coordination, it might get kind of lost in the shuffle.
Right. And that's why we're hoping that this march is kind of a start to that, at least in St. Louis, to be having conversations, working on racial justice and social justice issues as well, working on immigration. And we've had open community planning meetings where we've started to try to do that, but are not going to stop after tomorrow. We're just definitely going to continue that work even after this march is over.
Do you have a sense, Anne, that these days that the voices of people, just plain people, are being heard perhaps more clearly today than they were in the recent past?
I'm hopeful that that's the case. There have certainly been very discouraging events in recent months, but I'm hopeful that there are enough people who have simply had enough. And I can say for myself that this has been something I've had an interest in for my entire life. And simply now I realize that I can't afford to be too busy and I can't afford to be overwhelmed. And I think that more and more people collectively are sharing that feeling. And that's the challenge of our time, is to make sure that our voices are heard and not expect that it's just going to happen.
Mary, do you feel that you've learned anything from other demonstrations, such as the one that you're having tomorrow? I mean, just looking back not only to last week, but beyond that, do you learn things from what other people have done and tried to do?
Yeah, well, I think that the Women's March was incredibly inspiring to a lot of us. I was there in D.C., and I have been really inspired by what has happened after the Women's March. I think all of these marches have, in a sense, been influenced by that, but that the Women's March really started a cascade of more active citizens all over the country. I've seen small organizing circles, talking circles of people figuring out what they can do to make change. I think I saw a statistic about something like 86% of the calls that have been made to resist Trump's agenda have been made by women. And I think that that's because people were really mobilized by seeing each other out at the march in D.C. and the march across the country, and we're hoping to create a similar dynamic here.
And what's the profile of people in your organization, 350 STL? Women? Primarily women?
No, actually, I don't think that I could define the profile of someone who's a member of 350 STL. And if we're going to be true to our mission, we really have to keep that the case and actually expand the profile to be many, many different peoples, including gender identities and racial makeups and income levels and professions. And I'm pleased that I can't name a profile at this point in time, and I hope that over time we can become even more undefinable.
Mm-hmm. Chloe, how about more? Mm-hmm. Again, is it women leading the charge?
I think it's a diverse group of people as well for more. We work mainly with low-income and moderate-income folks and people of color, so that is a large makeup of our membership at more, because we believe that these people's voices need to be heard and are often ignored.
What about the age of the membership?
Yeah, a lot of us are younger, I guess, but we definitely have our board is mostly elderly Black women and people who have a lot of organizing wisdom that they've kept with them their whole lives.
And Anne, what about your group? Is it primarily younger people?
We have a large breadth of age diversity in our group. I think our youngest member at this time is 23 or 24, and our oldest member is 78.
So that's that runs the full gamut.
We sure do.
You have meetings.
We
regular
do.
Meetings, and what sort of turnout do you have for that?
Well, we have a few different types of meetings available to our members. We have general membership meetings, which happen monthly. If anyone is interested in attending one of those meetings, follow us on Facebook or on Twitter by searching for 350STL and signing up for our newsletter. We also have a steering committee meeting monthly at least, which is currently consisted of our founding members. And then we have a number of working groups, which are people with particular interests, whether they're interested in renewable energy specifically or other angles that we can take. But at our general membership meetings, I would say, what would you guys think? Like 30 to 50 people in general?
Yeah, I'd say that's right. Yeah.
Well, that's, again, that's a pretty decent number. You know, we're going to be talking a little bit later in this program about what is an apparent distrust of science and scientists. Is this something? I'll start with you, Mary. Is this something that you've run across that people are not quite willing to trust science?
Yeah, I think we see it more in our politicians than we do in the general American public, which is interesting. I think that, in Naomi Klein's book, actually, she talks about how a lot of that is kind of manufactured, the idea that there is a large mistrust of science. It's actually manufactured by the oil industry and the people, the industries that have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And I think there's actually a much smaller number of actual American citizens who don't believe the science.
Anne, what do you think? You follow the same line of thinking?
I do.
Yeah. It's very interesting that the science has been given kind of a back shelf. Chloe, you feel the same way.
Yeah, I definitely do.
Science has been given kind of a back shelf position. I mean, we're not teaching, or at least people don't seem to be interested in the STEM disciplines anymore, science, technology, engineering, and math, which is part of this problem. They don't understand it from the basics. They might not be quite so interested in a solution. Thoughts?
Yeah, I also think that some of the predictions, especially around climate change, are really scary, honestly, and are happening sooner than we might expect. And a lot of us here, I mean, we might see warmer weather or a weird storm that wouldn't usually happen. But, I mean, in other countries, they're seen it every day and on a larger scale. So maybe for us, it's just harder to believe that climate change is actually happening if we don't see it in our daily lives so much.
Yeah, you hear it a lot during the cold weather months when people will say, climate change, global warming, what are they talking about? It's 10 degrees below zero here today. So you have that kind of skepticism that works its way into it as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's happening at a vastly quicker rate than we've ever seen in history. But of course, it is still somewhat gradual. And yeah, it's hard to tie any one storm to climate change, but it's much more about the pattern of things. So it is possible to ignore it if you want to, or if it's kind of too scary.
What are your own backgrounds with regard to science? Mary, I'll start with you. Do you have a background in it at all?
I have a background in social science. I have a master's in social work, but no, not in strictly the STEM disciplines.
And what got you into this whole game?
I have kind of always been interested in environmental issues, but probably as much as I was interested in other social justice issues. And it wasn't until I really started learning about how all of those issues are connected that I really became passionate about environmental issues. I also started learning a lot more about our food industry and worked on some organic farms. And that really made me more passionate about protecting our earth and the people on our earth.
Yeah. And how about you? Your background and what fostered your interest?
Well, I would say that my interest, again, has been for my entire life, but my career is not in environment or in science. I'm in elementary education. But before I got into education, I had my first internship out of college was with a wonderful organization that protects indigenous people's land rights in the Amazon. And one of the most impactful experiences that I had as part of that internship was I had the privilege of translating for some indigenous leaders who went to Capitol Hill, who were advocating against oil drilling in the Amazon. And the way they spoke about the earth was a way that I have never heard anyone before or since speak about the earth. Speaking about the earth as mother, as not the Mother Earth or Mother Nature, earth is mother and oil is mother's blood. Mm-hmm. I felt incredibly privileged to be that close to people who honor the earth so profoundly. So it's been an interest of mine my entire career, even during education. And again, when I got to this point where I just said, I can't be too busy anymore. I need to do something else.
Chloe?
Yeah, I got involved with activism when I was in high school. And like I said, I'm just out of college. So since then, it's been a part of my life. And I studied environmental studies and sociology. So naturally, environmental justice is something that came out of that. And similarly to both of you, traveling to India and working on an organic farm there, I got to hear a lot of people's stories about how they're impacted by climate change and by changes in agriculture that are not for the better. I came back to the U.S. and was like, this is where I need to do the work. This is where we need to change things the most. So after I graduated, I decided to do organizing and farming full time. That's what I'll continue to do until I see some big changes.
It must be somewhat disheartening to see what's going on in other parts of the world and the interest that people elsewhere have in the kinds of things we're talking about today and see that it's really a second-tier issue here in this country. Do you see it that way, Chloe?
As a second-tier issue? Yeah. Definitely not. I see climate change as something that affects everyone in very different ways. But we also have to adjust racial and social justice, too, or else it's not a movement that includes everyone.
I mean second-tier in terms of public interest. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see it as something that people find controversial still, which is problematic because I don't think most people in other countries would say that that's true.
Well, we got to keep up with the Kardashians. Come on.
Right. I mean, it's kind of disappointing to see people concerned so much about pop culture as opposed to climate change, especially when it's an issue that is affecting people now in very real ways.
And you've already indicated that you've learned from other places and other peoples what the interest can be and should be.
Yes, and I've found in general I've had the opportunity to live and work in various places in Latin America, and oftentimes they have a different view of things, and Americans can be behind sometimes.
Yeah. How about you, Mary?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it has not taken up as much as importance as it should have in the last few years, but I'm hoping that's changing. I'm hoping this weekend will show that that's not what Americans want. And I think a big part of why it hasn't had a lot of political capital kind of is because of dark money and the oil industry's money influencing politicians, even though, you know, we've seen it with the Westlake landfill. When people realize that their communities are at risk, they rise up and they make a difference, and they absolutely care about environmental issues. So I hope that it's not as much a second-tier issue as it might seem like it is.
By the way, I'm advised here that the bill relating to Westlake Landfill is still in a House committee.
Okay.
So it's still out there, but
yeah.
But still in committee. Okay. And I have to let it go at that, ladies. I want to thank you so much for being with us. A reminder, the St. Louis People's Climate March, St. Louis People's Climate March, that's right, tomorrow at 12 o'clock at the Sarah Sculpture Park on 11th between Chestnut and Market downtown. Right?
Yes, and they can go to stlpcm.com for all the information.
We will put a link to that website on our website at stopublicradio.org.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chloe. Thank you so much. And thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Ann Barton Wienkamp, founder of 350 STL. Mary Miller, lead organizer for the St. Louis Climate March tomorrow. We've been talking about, and Chloe Jackson is with Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. I'll get it out eventually. Thank you both so much. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.